Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
Brian Lehrer on WNYC. Don't forget, later in the hour, we will take your blizzard status in a New York area call-in that's open to anyone else as well. We will ask, what are you doing right now because of the snow? And you can post this to our website. We have a blizzard status page at WNYC.org. Click on Brian Lehrer Show. A couple of specific questions we're thinking about. Anyone listening originally from the North Country, Minnesota or Buffalo or Canada or somewhere like that? When it snows a foot here, everything grinds to a halt. I have a feeling when it snows up there, you shove it aside and life goes on. Does a storm like this divide the workforce into train people and car people, where car people stay home from work and you train people come in and do everyone else's job? So if you're a train person on the job today, post about your double duty at WNYC.org. Click on Brian Lehrer Show. And, of course, the all-important question, do you go sledding in the middle of a blizzard or do you wait until it stops? Post your sledding and blizzard stories to WNYC.org. Click on Brian Lehrer Show, and we'll do these on the air coming up later this hour. But first, been there, done that seems to be the word from the Obama administration when it comes to moon missions. They want to outsource manned missions in general, privatize them, and instead pour money into researching deep space. Mars does seem to be on their agenda. So to tell us about the Obama space agenda now that it's emerging, and if this president gets the space program, is space policy analyst and former space and aviation correspondent for CNN, and some of you will recognize him now as the sometime substitute host on The Takeaway, Miles O'Brien. Hi, Miles.
We'll talk for food is what the theme is there. Anyway, it's
good
to be here.
At any hour of the morning.
Exactly.
So we're giving up on going back to the moon, and this is a change from President Obama over the Bush policy?
Yeah, the Bush policy goes back 6 years ago. It was a year after we lost Columbia. George Bush got out there and announced his vision for space exploration, which amounted to Apollo on steroids, is how it was described at the time by the then NASA administrator Mike Griffin. The idea was to build some, you know, expendable rockets, go back to the moon, set up a moon base, and then onward we go. Well, it was never properly funded over the six-year period. It was way behind schedule. We weren't getting anywhere with it. And so the Obama administration threw the whole thing out and said, let's do this. Low Earth orbit is no longer a challenge to us at NASA. And for that matter, going to the moon is something we've done. So let's see if we can get the private sector to do this in a more robust way. Maybe we'll start a whole industry. Who knows? Let them ferry astronauts to and from the space station. And then let's sink some money into the notion of going to Mars. What would it take? Can we get there faster? There's a lot of exciting technologies.
On developing new technologies to investigate deep space,
exactly.
Right?
Exactly. But as they rolled it out, people saw an end to low Earth orbit. They saw the end to a program. There's a lot of jobs associated with this, a lot of members of Congress upset. And they didn't really see what the destination and the date was. You know, we're used to Apollo. We will get to the moon by the end of the decade, right? And this is not that kind of announcement from the Obama administration.
So how much difference in terms of dollars to NASA are we talking about? Is it a significant cut to the total budget as it stands?
Actually, they got an up. They got basically about $1 billion more a year. And instead of that $3 billion hunk donated and allocated to the shuttle program, it now is put into earth sciences, into aeronautics research, and into this whole notion of coming up with novel propulsion ideas. You know, we're still sending rockets into space the way that Goddard and Tsiolkovsky did, you know, a couple of generations ago. There are other ideas on the drawing board that haven't been fully tested.
And Senator Bill Nelson from Florida, the only member of Congress who's actually been to space, is upset about this. Not the only one. It will affect the space industrial complex, I guess you were getting at before, in Florida and elsewhere.
Senator Richard Shelby of Alabama in Huntsville, there's a huge NASA installation, the Marshall Space Flight Center. He is raring mad. And here's the thing. I think it's important to remember, and we understand why members of Congress do this, but NASA and space should never be a jobs program. It should be about exploration. And to the extent that we are wedded to an infrastructure that holds us back one way or another with either old technology technologies or limited destinations, or it constrains the commercial sector, the private sector, from getting into this business, I think we need to move onward.
And I thought Senator Richard Shelby of Alabama was in the news recently for being against government jobs programs.
Well, it depends on which way it cuts, right?
Listeners, do you care if we ever go back to the moon or if the government does? Do you have a problem with NASA outsourcing manned space missions? Give us a call, 212-433-WNYC. Those of you who are space buffs, where should they focus their space exploration dollars? Maybe you like the idea of focusing on revolutionary technology to investigate deep space as the core of what the government does at this point. 212-433-WNYC, 212-433-9692. For Miles O'Brien, or post a comment online at WNYC.org. Click on Brian Lehrer Show, and let's take a call right now. Larry in Nyack. You're on WNYC. Hi, Larry.
Hi, Mr. O'Brien. You did a great job with your frontline story last night, and a great public service in bringing that to us all.
Thank you, Larry.
You're welcome. I've been a big fan of yours when you were in CNN. I remember when you were at the XPRIZE liftoff, I think it was in California, when they launched the same rocket twice within a couple of weeks. But being an engineer, I have two engineering degrees. I think this is a very misguided program. It's nice to think about going to space. I'm 65 years old. When I was a child, we used to watch these science fiction programs and movies.
Larry, I'm going to have to get you to the point here. Is your point that you're against spending money on going to space at all while we have problems here at home?
We have energy problems that have to be solved, and to waste time in space when we have these brains that could be working on possibly fusion or something else, I think it's a great mistake.
Larry, thank you very much. And you know what? We have a lot of listeners who feel that way. We have so many problems at home, science and technology problems and other problems. Why are we spending money on this at all?
Well, a couple of things. First of all of the technology which gets rocketed into space is captured and kept here on the planet and is used in other ways. If you can go through the history of NASA and think about all the things they have done, and I'm not talking about space food sticks and Tang here. I'm talking about real technological innovations. Remote medicine comes to the top of the fore just off the top of my head. But there are many technological applications which have served us well in the greater economy above and beyond space exploration. The other thing that is important not to forget here is the larger issue of our competitiveness as a nation. There is a unquantifiable aspect of space exploration that engages kids, makes them want to study these science, technology, engineering, mathematics programs. We have a deficit in this area, and to the extent that kids latch on to this space exploration and decide to engage in these courses, it ultimately goes right to the bottom line to our economy. Space, in my opinion, is an investment.
Mike in Brooklyn, you're on WNYC. Hi, Mike.
Hey, how you doing?
Good.
So I'm not a scientist myself, and I do love, the concept of space exploration and all that. But we have family friends who are sort of leading astrophysics scientists and teachers at some of the top universities. And I remember discussions with them years ago, with the first Bush administration, actually, that they were being approached by officials in the government, in the Air Force and military, trying to get them to sign off on manned exploration projects, and then sort of promising them money in return for their science at the university. On satellites, but they were all of the mind that the manned exploration stuff was a big front for the development of, I guess, military technology and military strategy, and they never thought there was any real science behind a manned trip to Mars or the moon.
Mike, that's a great question, and let's get an answer.
It's an excellent question, because if you look at the roots of the space race, obviously that was a military adversarial historically,
US
that's what it was all about.
Soviet Union,
this is in the
Cold
context
War.
Of the Cold War, and this was a surrogate war that we fought to get to the moon. There's no question about that. And the science that came out of Apollo, bringing those rocks back, has been good, but it obviously wasn't the primary goal.
So is that another distinction here, though? Was the Bush space program primarily militarily focused, And is the emerging Obama space program a change of emphasis?
Well, we're in the midst of an evolution here. You know, NASA is still trying to move into the future and get away from its previous glories and Apollo days. And what is on the drawing board now with the Obama administration is more true to the notion of true exploration and focusing on science.
Science for science's sake.
Exactly. I mean, this, you know, going back to the moon might be considered more of a stunt. And certainly the moon in 1969 was not about science in the purest sense.
And what about the commercial applications? If Obama wants more privatization of space flights to the space station and other things that are in low Earth orbit, are there commercial companies right now that could fill that role? Are we far off from commercial shuttles to space as we get ready to retire the government shuttle fleet?
Well, as we speak right now, a precursor to one of those is stacked up on a launch pad at the Kennedy Space Center. It's a company by the name of SpaceX. The founder is Elon Musk, the man who gave us PayPal, who has always been a space passionate and got into this business of trying to send cargo, and he hopes ultimately human beings, to the International Space Station. If NASA steps out of low Earth orbit and gives a little space for the likes of Elon Musk, there are competitors in this realm, or Orbital Sciences, who have won seed money contracts from NASA to do just this. If they get out of the way and seed an industry, it's hard to even imagine right now what kinds of spinoffs and how that would affect our economy on the plus side.
So in the meantime, while the private sector figures out how to fly people to space, are we going to have to rely on the Russians or the Chinese or something like that?
Yeah, we're going to be, you know, it's basically a Russian taxi to the International Space Station. That doesn't sit well with a lot of people. We don't like the notion of not being able to launch our own people. But it's happened before. When Apollo ended in the mid-70s, there was a long gap until the shuttle was ready in 1981. So we've been through that, and it's a tough time for the space program. They lose a lot of good people as a result of it. But unless you had spent a lot more money a while ago, this gap was inevitable.
Diane in Brooklyn, you're on WNYC. Hi, Diane.
Hi. Listen, I've been working on environmental issues in my community, both as a professional and as a volunteer. But all of my adult life, I have cherished the dream of the United States helping to support an international space program and an interplanetary space program. I do not think our government should give it up at this point. It is our dream, and we should be there.
Well, you know, imagine a space exploration policy, and this goes to the heart of the previous question about what the militaristic undertones to all of it. What if we got together as a family of nations and decided to go to Mars? We've already done this. We've proven it can be done. The International Space Station is a 16-nation partnership. The only major spacefaring nation that's not a part of it is China. And I'd like to see that change. Why not bring China into that fold? And why don't we collectively think about going to Mars? Wouldn't that be a much more dramatic and, in the sense of humanity, a more wonderful trip? Think about it for a second. When you think about the Cold War and the space race, it was this rivalry all until the moment Neil Armstrong planted that flag on the moon. And then all of a sudden, in a very strange, purely ironic way, it brought people together. Humanity celebrated it. These are adventures that we can all relish in, and it can bring us together. I know that sounds Pollyanna, but it's true.
Now, Stephen Stony Brook thinks he knows why the Chinese and Russians want to go to the moon. Let's hear it. Steve, you're on WNYC. Hi.
Brian, good morning. Thank you for taking my call. Senator, I know I only have a couple of seconds.
He's not a senator. Are you running for Senator, Miles?
He is journalist
Miles O'Brien.
Sorry. I know I only have a couple of seconds. The Chinese and the Russians have made no secret about their plans to go to the moon. They've also made no secret about why. They're going to go get the helium-3 isotope that's all over the surface. The reason why it's there is because it's a natural product of fusion that's coming off of the sun as a result of solar winds and is captured in the weak gravitational field of the moon.
Are you saying it's a form of renewable energy?
It's the fuel. It's the helium-3 is the fuel that is needed to power the fusion reactor, the experimental reactor, the ITER, that's in Europe. It's going to work, but we need helium-3 isotope in order, and I won't go into the details as to why, but there are very specific physics and chemistry reasons why.
Steve, I'm going to leave it there.
All right.
But
well,
Miles, do you know about this?
Yeah,
this
helium-3 is...
Is there a helium-3 subculture out there that I don't know about?
You have just been introduced by Steve to the helium-3 world. world. Usually they have very squeaky voices, though. No, just kidding. And helium-3 is, in fact, does have some promise as a way to power fusion reactions. It's never been fully demonstrated, though, that this can be done on any sort of large scale to produce power. It is not something that we find here on Earth. It is plentiful on the moon. The question is, when you really start doing the dollar the at the bottom of the line, doing the cost-benefit analysis of grabbing helium-3 and bringing it back to the Earth, I still haven't seen the proof that this is the way to go. But, hey, maybe it could be done.
One more call. Bob in Westchester, you're on WNYC with Miles O'Brien. Hi, Bob.
Hi, thanks for taking my call. I love all these goals of space exploration. I'm as good a Star Trek fan as they come. But I find NASA to be an extremely hidebound bureaucracy, and I just think it's a poor agency to accomplish those goals. Ever since the shuttle disaster, job one at NASA is don't make a mistake, be very conservative. I think this is a very fresh approach on the part of the Obama administration.
I think you're onto something there. I think you really are, because what we're talking about when we talk about letting the commercial sector move into low Earth orbit, we're talking about NASA sort of changing its requirements for allowing its astronauts to fly. They are hidebound. They are a bit risk-averse. They set up a list of requirements for spacecraft that make it, to be sure, very safe, but is it all that necessary now? Maybe it's time to let the commercial sector take a more reasonable approach to safety.
So commercial sector for manned flights in Earth's orbit, to the space station, maybe to the moon, government funding for research on going to deep space and other revolutionary technologies. This budget has to be approved by Congress. The new Obama space agenda, is it going to pass?
You've been interviewing
members, right?
There's going to be a bit of a Donnybrook over this one. You can imagine there are key members of Congress. Shelby, we've talked about. There are others who have jobs that are associated with all of this. And so there will be a fight. There is no question. And I suspect parts of Constellation, this program that was canceled, will in fact be resuscitated as part of the horse trading and all this. But the general philosophy here, to let the commercial sector do low Earth orbit and let NASA do what it should do, push the envelope and get us farther out, I don't think there's really a lot of fight over that.
We have Richard Shelby lobbying on one side and maybe Richard Branson lobbying on the other side.
There you go. That'd be an interesting fight right there, wouldn't it?
Miles O'Brien, and great job on that Frontline piece last night. Thank you very much
for joining us.
Pleasure. Leonard Lopate, by the way, is also going to be talking about the future of the space program in about an hour. So if you're interested in more space talk, just stay tuned. Brian Lehrer on WNYC, coming up in a minute. Very excited to be talking with both the Chief Technology Officer and the Chief Transparency Officer of the Obama administration. And we'll see some of the results from the crowdsourcing project that we did with them and you over the last day. See what you've come up with as they are releasing more and more government data online. Stay with us.